Thank you. So I just found out I have my honorary degree in medicine. Thank you so much. I was like, sweet. So I'm working here. Okay.
You still have to pay for it.
Pardon?
You still have to pay for it.
You know, I think there's a loan forgiveness program for public health professionals. So again, John Abelera, I am the project lead for the NEDS program. And so this is a, I don't know how many of you are familiar with NEDS, but if I can see a show of hands. So a lot of you. And so really the beginning of this conference was really the NEDS stakeholders meeting, and now it's been morphed into the FIN conference. So it's pretty exciting that you are familiar. And for my discussion today, I'm gonna provide you an overview of the NEDS project and really take it back down to sort of the current challenges that we experience at our colleagues at the state and local, and then as well as at CDC here. And I think the work that a lot of you are doing is very intriguing, and I think hopefully can help influence us as we work towards developing a strategic plan for NEDS. So I think, you know, just after listening to and watching your presentations, that perhaps the organizers maybe misclassified this presentation as more of a, not so much a demo, but more of a programmatic piece. So hopefully at least we can address some of the current status of NEDS in terms of the investments that we've made and the impact that we've had at the state, local, and federal level, and then to present to you the strategic plan that we've been working on for the last few months. So the mission of NEDS is to promote the efficient, integrated, and interoperable surveillance systems by taking data standards, information system standards, to facilitate the exchange of data between public health systems, laboratories, clinical providers, and other reporting entities to support disease surveillance. So NEDS is the surveillance components of the Public Health Information Network, and we support the provision of data to the NEDS National Notified Disease Surveillance System, otherwise known as NNDSS. There are the components of the NEDS program that we focus on. We focus on promulgation of policy and standards to applications and tools such as the NEDS base system and the NEDS messaging subscription service to capacity building, providing external funding to states and providing training to our state epidemiologists. So here's representation of the notified disease data flow that we live in. And we live in because in a lot of ways that the confidential morbidity report that state and local public health received through paper, and the laboratory and the clinical labs, at least, we have made a lot of progress in promoting electronic laboratory reporting and being able to accept that type of information. So the NEDS plays certainly a role in this exchange of information, whether it's putting out a standard. And for the case of case reporting, we've been working really hard over the last 6 months to work on an implementation guide for case reporting. And the initial focus has been on four conditions, but you know, the intent is to develop a template where we can expand that to account for all notifiable conditions for that state or local jurisdiction. So that's in our world of case reporting and the activities that we're engaged in. And then we have working at the state and local level. And one of the applications that we provide to states, number one, is the NEDS base system. This sits in 16 states. And it's an application, it's an integrated disease surveillance system. And we're working continuously in terms of the, you know, continuing to provide enhancements to that system. But that type of information in process is a case report. And the states and epidemiologists use that system to catalog investigation data and eventually send that to the CDC through a case notification. So one of the other areas is the promulgation of a standard to send a case notification for national notifiable conditions. So this in itself is a challenge because of the transition that we've been making from the adoption of a NEDS application to be able to send a standard message in HL725, which in most cases, a lot of states are still sending NEDS.data file. And then some complete sort of the information flow is the ability to be, provide information to WHO. And although, you know, another key component to this is also providing that bi-directional feedback to the healthcare provider, to the people that are supplying that information to us. And conversely with CDC providing surveillance data back to the state and local health department. So these are the current activities. I sort of walked you through some of these in the information flow with electronic case reporting, electronic laboratory reporting, case notification, and that's based system. I think the last bullet here is the prototype and pilot projects that we are involved in public health surveillance to improve the automation processes in surveillance. You know, as I come back, and I'll go back to this information flow, as states send an HL7 or a case notification to CDC, how can we help the programs at CDC get access to that information in a timely manner, and how can we help validate that type of information in a timely manner? And so the prototype projects that we've been involved in, and I didn't include any type of the graphs that we have available that explains sort of the validation tool that we've have worked on, taking work that we've worked with OntoReason to use ontology to apply business rules and content validation to an incoming message, aside from structural validation. So there are other prototype projects that we have engaged in, you know, with H1N1 and looking at the ability to provide forms on the fly for emerging infectious disease. So these are some of the things that we in our program have looked at, and looking at the NETS based system as a living laboratory to do that type of stuff. So the type of the NEDS investments and the impact that we've made, basically the extramural funding, I don't know if any of you are interested in this, but certainly I know our state and locals folks are, that we've in the last year, we provided about $10.5 million to support a lot of the activities that would help support disease surveillance, and mainly people. And so 88% of that, or $9 million, which translates to, were used to fund personnel. And the remaining funds were used to provide support to travel, licenses for Ryan Rhapsody particularly, and so here's sort of the perspective of the NEDS progress. In terms of, we looked at specific criteria on what defines a NED-compatible system. This is something that we've been working with over the last 5 years, is that a system has an integrated data repository, functionality for electronic laboratory reporting, and be able to receive that type of information from commercial labs, and have the ability to be a web browser base. And then the last component here, criterion is the FIN standard-based electronic messaging, the case notification from NEDS compatible system to CDC, and you can see that we are somewhat behind in that, and that's because partly we've invested a little of our time and effort into development of message mapping guides. So here's sort of a look at the distribution of NEDS investments over the same 5 years, and you can see with the box here in 2006, there were a lot of investments that were made, and you know, with the NEDS PAM platform, it was an application that never took off, the NEDS base system, which we still continue to support, and then investing in COTS products such as Rhapsody, geocoding, and deduplication software. And then also we helped develop and expand Informatics tools and solutions with the message subscription service, vocabulary access and distribution, and a transport mechanism in FinMS. And then also working with LabCorp and establish process for case notification. So the red line here represents sort of that the type of funds that we've invested in terms of contracts. And then the green is sort of the extramural funding that we provide through the epidemiology laboratory capacity. So you start to see a shift here as we move towards 2009, where there's less contracts and more money, hopefully, being provided to the states to help fund personnel and training. But more importantly, the impact that this initial investment has made is really been able to increase the web-based adoption or adoption of NEDS compatible solutions in states. As I showed the actual the bar chart there, that you saw about 44 states that have a NEDS compatible solution. And then we've also increased the information exchange by providing tools such as Rhapsody, so states can process and provision, the type of data received from healthcare providers, and be able to send that same information to CDC. So again, another look at this sort of investment and the impact that we've made. And you can start to see that the blue represents electronic laboratory reporting and how many more jurisdictions are able to have that functionality, as well as the FIN standard-based messaging or case notification to CDC and having that that capability to do that. So we are making improvements, which is pretty exciting. Here's sort of a distribution of NEDS compatible solutions. The yellow represents NEDS MBS dates, and there are other vendors that have systems, and then that have a huge footprint, and then as well as state developed systems in the light blue. So I can talk a lot about the challenges in NEDS, and we have to think about the remaining states that do not have a NEDS compatible solution, but also looking at enabling information exchange from multiple data sources, including interoperating between systems. I think one of the interesting milestones, at least with the NEDS-based system and hopefully us working with other NEDS-compatible solutions, is the ability to share information between each other. I know it sounds like really simple, but we really have not been, done a good job in doing that. And then transitioning from NEDS to NEDS, it's the case notification for moving from a legacy format to an HL725. And there are a lot of challenges in that, both in pushing out the message mapping guides, but also providing the training to states and the programs here at CDC to be able to look at that information. So now the NEDS strategic plan. And this is an area that, what is it really? It's a 3 to 5 year strategic plan to really lay out the roadmap for NEDS stakeholders in general, but to help guide local, state, and federal development around surveillance of notifiable conditions. How this was put together was we had two face-to-face meetings, which consisted of about 58 stakeholders across public health, mainly state and local NEDS coordinators, and SMEs from CDC programs. And then we also had further opportunity to talk to our counterparts at CSTE, Council of State and Territorial Epidemiologists, in their pre-conference workshop, and sort of sharing with them the outcome from the first two stakeholder meetings to what has now transpired to this draft strategic plan. So again, it's the strategic plan is to advance the core components: policy, standards, application tools, funding, training, and workforce development. So as I share with you, remind you that this is still a working draft, but we're pretty close to, I think, finalizing and moving towards the next stage with the operational plan, is to strengthen the capacity of public health in protecting and promoting the health of individual communities by proposed strategic goal number one, and remind you in no priority order, enhancing surveillance processes to improve the timeliness, completeness, and accuracy of reporting and notification. It's really a no-brainer, but I think these are areas that need a lot of attention still. Electronic laboratory reporting to now, electronic case reporting as we move towards that, and then to really work with the ability to transition from NETs to NEDS and be able to fully automate the case notification process so we can have that timeliness of information, and to collaborate with other folks across the different agencies. The second is enhance interoperability between NEDS compatible systems and tools to be able to take the public health case report implementation guide and to be able to apply that in a particular use case where we can send information between two systems or between another system and a tool. And then again, the last bullet here is, and I emphasize this because this is an important part of the program for NEDS, is the transition, the full transition plan from NETS to NEDS. And then ensuring sufficient human, financial, and technical resources for surveillance. We understand that there are workforce issues, and we have to be able to address that. And so that's definitely a no-brainer part of our strategic goal. The fourth is to develop and implement an integrated policy framework for surveillance. As we start to share electronic information, it's just making sure that we're aligned with and consistent with the policy at the CDC and other at that level. And then finally, collaborating to create a shared knowledge of information and solution that NED stakeholders come together and be able and are able to share the type of information, the type of work that the folks are doing at Mount Sinai about you know, case detection, seeing how we can help push that forward. So that, in a nutshell, are the goals that are associated with this strategic goal or the strategic plan. So we intend to continue this discussion. We intend to get the national laboratories involved and provide input, but also reach out to our partner organizations, such as NACHO, ASTHO, NCSTE, and APHL. And then we prioritize the type of feedback that we get from the stakeholders, because it's very important. And then where we're planning to go with this is to develop a technical and operational plan. And we hope to engage in that in October. And then certainly think about the performance metrics for NED's compatible systems that we can all adhere to. So that, in a nutshell, is my presentation. So thank you.
Okay, what I'd like to do for questions, here. We can get all three of you on stage, and then if we can't get through all the questions, they'll still be up here, and you can come forward and talk to them one-on-one. How would that? I don't know who gets to stand there, but that's the worst spot. So any questions for any of these three folks? I got one right now.
So to go across all three presentations, John, what do you think about the feasibility of looking at natural language processing?
So, yeah. Well, first of all, I was quite excited. I think one of the I wish you could have participated in the work group meeting that we had this morning at 7, which was a case report standardization work group, and really that work group was intended to address the AAHIC recommendations. But in a nutshell, I think one of the things that I'd be interested to see all of you engage in is really looking at the report criteria that CSTE has included in their position statement. And I think that's an area that we're going to lean towards, academia, to help us see and help validate that the report criteria can be applied to an electronic medical record, and to help facilitate the type of case reporting that we need in a timely manner, but also take into consideration that NLP can help with at least the early event detection of a potential case.
Yeah, I could add, John, that when I was in the Population Health Technical Committee at HITSPE, we had a case reporting use case from AHIC that we were working on. The standards weren't there for all of the pieces, and that's part of what CSTE was working on. But a lot of the current recommendations, and I think they're going to advance with capabilities, were geared to what they thought were the capabilities in health information technology. So they specified things like, if you have a diagnosis of tuberculosis, it's a reportable, notifiable disease. It is confirmed by, an FTABS or, MTA, MATF, yeah, the other TB.
Letters.
Yeah, the other letters for TB test, MHATB, yeah. And then but they didn't look at the capabilities of whole record identification. They did look at some of the signs and symptoms that might make you think of it from the chief complaint. But when we published data in the past, a third of the chief complaints are empty. Another third of them have kind of non-clinical data in them. And when there is data in the chief complaint, you can get it out with NLP very accurately. I think it was 98%-something accuracy, but it wasn't there a lot. So I think looking at other areas of the chart, making sure that we use all of the patient's relevant data, and then engaging as a really a partnership, our colleagues in CSTE and also in the CDC, to work together to take what we can do in technology and then craft best models from there in order to do the best we can for our patient population, which we all care so very much about.
And another point, if I may, is obviously, when the doc is thinking of the case, the doc is likely to think about the case and maybe document the problem. But there are, as you know, outbreaks that occur where it just doesn't even cross the healthcare provider's mind. And if you've got a second agent looking at all the nodes with this thought process, you know, flu is starting to come up, let's start looking in nodes for flu, then that takes the burden of surveilling for all of these different diseases we worry about off the very busy doc who's, you know, trying to see 30, 40 patients in a day and do what's best for them. In the meantime, you can use some of this technology to do what's best for the community.
I have another one up here. Still have a question?
No, I sense a kind of tension between a tendency to get clinicians to maybe create discrete data that's already computer processable. In other words, click, cough, present, yes or no, and you know have a discrete data that could easily be grabbed, processed, computer readable, versus let the clinician work in their own world the way they've been used to doing it, that's really quick and user friendly, dictate a new history and physical, and then take your technology to generate discrete data. I don't know, is there a tension going on there? Is there one horse ahead in that race?
Yeah, there has been.
Reconcilable? Can you comment?
Well, sure. I think they are, in my opinion. I'll give my opinion, but first let me give you some of the data that's out there. The ALTA, which is the military record, has for years had people document in a structured fashion. And there's been a fair revolt against the activity, and many of the providers are just typing in free text to get around it. And the VA, they have templates available, but the uptake of the templates are not as pervasive as they would like because the clinicians find it more rapid to document and more expressive to document their note with free text. Now, I personally believe that there are some high money items like problems, meds, allergies that we could get through structured data entry. But I think when you get to the history of the present illness, I think it's going to be too complex and take too long to do the data entry. And there's been no good example that I've seen, and there have been several failed ones. I mean, not just Medicomp, but you know, Oceania did that and they went out of business. And there's been several other attempts at trying to do this very detailed structured entry, and the complexity and time burden that it put on the practice was just too onerous in general.
So this is an area that I've got a team we're researching very actively with funding from the National Library of Medicine, therefore all of you, thank you very much. Looking specifically at this tension between expressivity, which is the term we use to mean a whole bunch of different things, but what it really comes down to is a narrative flexibility that makes the physician documenting or the nurse documenting a note come across as intelligent and be able to put in their thinking in a way that makes sense to the reader and gives a sense of the urgency of the problem and the strange words that the patient may have used to describe their feathery chest discomfort, none of which a structured entry system is going to allow you to do. Now, the long history of biomedical informatics going back to before the 60s, when the very first electronic health record systems were being created, included systems to allow structured documentation. And so as long as we've had medical records on computers, we've had attempts at structured documentation. And you know, here today, all these years later, it's not being used, which echoes what Peter said. That said, there are clearly parts of the medical record which are more likely and parts which are less likely to benefit from structured documentation. So the problem list and the med list, the review of systems. It's probably very efficient to go through and go click, 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 yes, no, 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 yes, yes, yes. For the H&P, the history, you know, the patient was climbing a tree and fell off and twisted his ankle. You know, there's no way you're going to get that. So we think, at least for a long time coming, we're going to see success in hybrid methods where you've got the structure for things which the workflow supports structure and flexible text for things where you really want to describe what's going on. And our tools for surveillance need to be smart enough to look at both.
If I may follow up, do clinicians today write notes in free text form for their own use, or are they being changing their notes because somebody else is reading this, or would be useful to someone else?
I think both. There are a number of reasons. There are a number of forces which impact the content of the notes that healthcare providers write. Fundamentally, we write notes because we want to record what we observe and what we think, so that we can put it in the medical record and have that as a reference point for future care provided by me, provided by my colleagues, provided by someone else. However, you know, the researchers want to use our records, the quality improvement folks want to use our records, the lawyers want to look at our records, Medicare wants to use my record so I can drop a bill, and on and on and on. And all of these things impact the nature, the content, the structure of what's in there. I create a note this long in my busy clinic day because that's the only way that I can bill for the work that I've done. If I didn't write it, it's not done. I create a note this long because I need to cover myself in case I'm wrong and someone later comes snooping at my medical record to understand what my thinking is, which, by the way, is a place where expressivity is important.
Right. So that changes your note?
Yes. No. What it hopefully does not do, it changes it changes what you put in a note, but it doesn't change the facts and the assertions about the case in theory. So if you're looking for presence of fever and cough, or absence of it, you might be more likely to document that now than 30 years ago, but you're probably not more or less likely to put in incorrect assertions. So, you know, put in a cough that's present where previously it wasn't, so that I can get the x-ray paid for. We don't think that's going on by and large, but who knows? And so that's why we're studying.
It is 3 o'clock, but I think all three of these guys, I don't know if anybody's running off right away.
No, stay.
More? Okay, if you have to go, be quiet, otherwise we can just keep asking questions.
Yeah, I'd like to.
I'm curious about Dr. Elkin, the slide you showed.
Yes, sir.
The symptoms that you mined was an early indicator of ILI before you got all the information there. Have you ever compared that to what we would get with what I'll call an old-fashioned syndromic surveillance for all we have received complaints?
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, we have a health affairs paper that's under review right now where we showed that it was far superior. Whole record surveillance is far superior to chief complaint surveillance. The best model for the chief complaint had a C statistic of 0.714, and for the whole record, it was 0.822. That's hugely different, and by DeLong's method, at a P of less than 0.001. I mean, it is definitely, whole record surveillance is definitely superior to chief complaint surveillance. We've proven that, shut the door on it. Now, it seems obvious, but when I came to the CDC and I said, you know, you really should be using whole records, they said exactly this. They said, how do you know it's any better than just using the chief complaint, which is what we're doing today? So I said, okay, I'll do this. So we did a study, right? And now we've got data and it's ready to publish and out there. It's the ROC curves are done, everything's done. So it should be coming out, hopefully, third review with METS, so hopefully it'll be in health affairs. So we'll have that data point. Thank you.
Dr. Elkin, what are the fundamental differences within the NLP framework that distinguish it between NLP and IML in terms of just looking at
This is as much historical as scientific. So historically, what people have done with NLP is they've said, okay, I want to find cough. So they built a parser that read through the text to find cough and identified every record that had cough in it. And if you wanted to find something else, they built a different parser. So we did a parser with a fundamentally different perspective, which was to parse everything out of the text that you could up front, so that you have it in an index, that it's in a relational set of structures and in XML structures. And that made it available for every question you wanted to ask. So if you thought of a new question, the activation energy to asking that question was very low because you already had all the data. All you had to do was ask the question. But then we went further. We realized that you needed structures, knowledge structures within this that you had to build. So as I said, you know, when you put two facts together to mean something that you couldn't have known from any one fact together, creates intelligence. Well, that's what this does. It creates compositional expressions that are unique to that encounter and very specific, that help us to match very specific inclusion and exclusion criteria for any rule, so that we fire it off on the right population, and then the rule itself. And so it becomes thinking, and it also allows us to generate rules from the populations. We can compare two populations' distribution, and that's how we got the flu models. We had a population of patients that were tested for flu and those who tested negative and positive. And we were able to compare these two populations of positive and negative testing to compare what the odds ratios were for any sign or symptom in every piece of the record, which is how the RSC curves and the models were built that I referenced in that work that showed that the whole record surveillance was better than the chief complaint surveillance alone. So in a way, that becomes much more intelligent than just finding a word or a set of words in an exact match in a document, which has traditionally been what people have delivered.
Yeah. One area where the NLP skill sets could be gainfully deployed that would harmonize with what John Aviler talked about, one of the holy grails for applied public health is electronic lab reporting. Right. One of the biggest challenges is to identify those lab tests that are expressed in natural language that contain reportable diseases. It's pretty easy for most folks to develop a filter that identifies, say, a lead test.
Can you give this guy
above a certain level, but here's
$5. Thank you for the question. I didn't really pay him ahead of time for that, but one of my colleagues, Mike Matheny, was the same one who collaborated with Trent. We have a poster out in the hall, did exactly that. We took the, I'll get you the five in a minute, but anyway, we took a set of a couple hundred thousand lab reports that were microbiology reports from the VA, parsed them up, found the organisms, and found all of the sensitivities and cultures that were done, put them into a knowledge representation form, parsed them into SNOMED, found each of these, put them into a regular form, and then we did one more thing that you were going to ask for but you didn't think of yet, is we determined which ones were contaminated versus which ones were real infections, you know? And then we had those available, and then we evaluated the accuracy of the tool, and that's actually one of the posters that's out in the thing. And Monk did a great job with that, and Enlay Wong, who's right behind you, worked on that with us. And Trent, you may have been part of that.
I was peripheral.
So we have a bunch of people. Trent was on this thing, worked on it. It was a wonderful group. But anyway, it's something that's needed for everybody, right? We need to have lab reporting. We've got to get the micro results. They're always in those textual forms. They're really easy to read, but they're very hard to parse. And it took, if we show you the technology behind it, there were like many programs. One program did this, and the next one did that. And there was a sequence in order to get it a reasonable sensitivity and specificity out of it. But anyway, come look at our poster. And
I don't know what your operating model is, but I mean, it'd be great if CDC would, you know, contract to get that and have enough laboratories so that it would be applicable to any laboratory.
Take the money already.
Five, yeah. You know, put it in the public domain so that everybody's working on this filter. See, they can play that piece.
Hey, man, thank you. I love you. I don't know who you are, but I feel very close to you already.
you got a new friend. I know John had a question. John, there's people poking their heads in, so I think we've got a clear audio now. So thank you very much for coming.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it's a pleasure. Good job. I didn't pay that guy.